It's Sunday morning. I'm wearing pajamas, so you know what that means.
It's about to get interesting.
Quite right. Otherwise known as Time for the Sucks Podcast. I'm your host, Brad.
And I'm your host, Dave.
And producer Joe is traveling today, not able to join us. Aww. We miss you, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
This, of course, is a podcast where we talk about design, intentional and otherwise, and all the ways that UX,
user experience design,
impact us every day. We are lovers, not experts. Right?
That's right. I'm not doing it anymore, Brad.
Oh, you're not doing that.
We're not doing it.
We removed that bit. Yeah. We started this podcast as a way to talk about why things were made the way they are and where those design decisions might have gone off the rails.
Yeah.
Good morning, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Brad. You said I joined you there. I tried to join you, but last week, I don't know, my mic gave out. I can't do the mites. It wasn't meant to be.
Oh, yeah. It cut out.
It just cut out.
Yeah, it just cut out.
So I don't know what to do now. Now I got rid of my bit and I don't have a bit. I'm bitless.
You're bitless.
I don't know what to do, Brian. How are you doing?
I think it'll be okay. I'm fine.
How's life?
Life is good.
Yeah.
Life is good. It's back to school time. So it's craziness around here and all the things. But yeah, how about you?
Pretty good, Brett. You know, I started a new job. I got a new gig. Creative manager now. Just sounds awesome. Mm-hmm. Feels awesome. And I have to buy all my own equipment. And we've been talking about this. And I really think that, you know, I set up my home office. Two things. One, you know, we did the work from home episode, right?
Yeah, we did. I can't remember the episodes that we've done.
We were pretty clearly pro work from home.
Yeah.
That's kind of changing to me. I don't know why.
So you want to be in an office?
I feel really focused. I actually have an office now. Mm-hmm. So I feel really focused in that office.
See, this is the thing, Dave. Mm. With seniority comes you wanting to be in the office.
That's right.
And that was I'm part noticing, of what we talked about.
And I'm noticing the change.
And I disagree.
Well, I'll tell you, Brad, I'm more productive and I feel like more drive. Maybe it's because I'm new, still learning things, still learning people. I don't know. But the other thing is, I'm buying equipment, and I know I went on and on about this, guys, ad nauseum to you guys.
Well, you're not very good at it, is the thing.
It's not that I'm not very good at it, but I really think there's an episode on buying tech because it's very complicated. And if you're someone like me who's really bad at making decisions and really like analyzes every little piece, it could just be gridlock. Like you could just stop. Like it took me like a good month and a half to buy.
It's choice paralysis, which actually has a direct connection with streaming services, which we're going to talk about in a bit, right?
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. Indeed. So I bookmark that, users, because I think buying tech will be a good one.
And I think this is a Dave problem. So
that'll be a fun episode where we'll just rag on Dave for an hour.
We'll let the users decide. We will.
I mean, Brad, are you a type of guy who just makes a decision? But that doesn't mean you're making the best decision. So
that's correct. You know, I mean, I have this whole thing about, you know, leadership where, you know, part of the responsibility of, you know, of being in leadership is being willing to make decisions and being willing to be wrong.
And then owning up to that. And that also ties into this episode, as we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yeah.
Because the decision was definitely made. And it was wrong.
You're talking about the company that we will be discussing today, which
absolutely
our guests and users already know from the episode.
Yes, sir. But before we do that, Brad, do you think we should jump into a little
cool shit, talking about cool shit because it's cool, like that?
Exactly like that, Brad. You know, you say it so well. I don't know if I have to run the the theme song, but I will anyway.
It's the cool shit. It's the cool shit. It's the cool shit.
It's old people telling you what's cool.
I'm going to go first. Yep. This one I called Dr. Doolittle. I walk with the animals, talk with the animals. This is from an article in The Guardian, which, by the way, I'm going to plug here. I'm a big fan of The Guardian. They do a lot of good reporting, and they keep popping up this little yellow banner at the bottom that says, hey, this isn't a paywall, but maybe you should pay. And it tells
you. Could you throw us a dollar?
It tells you how many articles you've read.
Right.
I have read over 100 articles this year, and I think that's more effective than a paywall.
Yeah.
Well, probably not, because I haven't paid yet, but I'm thinking about
clearly
it.
Clearly, it's not.
I mean, they're really good at what they do. I follow Hugo Lowell, I think his name is. He does a lot of like the Trump crime beat. So I follow that stuff. I have alerts on my Twitter for him. He's awesome. He's always the breaking news guy. Yeah,
because you're a big Trump fan and you just want to make sure that he's going
to. I want to make sure he's going to be all right, Brad.
Yeah, all this fake news. Right.
This is not a political podcast, sorry, Bradley. Okay. Moving into the animals. Let's get to the animal world here, the animal kingdom. Okay. So there's a company called Earth Species Project based out of California, ESP for short. They started around 2017 with donations from the likes of LinkedIn's Reid Hoffman, who has, I think he has a podcast himself, right?
I think so.
So basically what they're trying to do is they're going to decode all of the animal kingdom's language, right? Or communication. And the idea is then they're going to make that public to everybody to say, okay, so everybody can benefit from this, right? They're going to do it using AI, you know, obviously, or machine learning, right? And I put in here, like, what is machine learning? Because this is one of those buzzwords, you know, like...
AI does get overused as like, yeah, some like, sort of like just magical term.
Right, right. Machine learning. How do machine learning models work? Machine learning models are generated by analysts. This is from Google's Think with Google. Generated by analyzing vast amounts of historical data, identifying correlations and trends between key data points, and using those insights to make accurate predictions about consumer behavior.
So wait. You're just talking about being able to talk to the animals.
And walk with the animals, Brad.
How does AI help you walk with the animals?
I don't know, Brad. I'm just trying to make a joke. I'm trying to make a joke. Anyway, you broke up the flow there, buddy. I was about to segue into the way they're using this machine language. It's pretty neat. What they do is they take the words, right, from one language. They do this to human language. And they'll say, okay, they look at how the sounds or whatever are placed next to each other, and it creates a shape. And then they notice that there's a similar shape in another language. And then they're doing pretty exact translations using this shaping method. I don't fully understand it. Again, read the article, but they're going to apply that to the animal kingdom. Okay. I just like saying animal kingdom, Brad. And they're going to just see, they don't know yet. They don't have any, you know, they're still doing this, but they're going to see, they're going to be like, I don't know if it's more interesting that these shapes match up in the animal world or more interesting that they're different than ours. So to be seen, Brad, but I'll tell you what, to keep this short and sweet, I think the only takeaway when we start to get to talking to these animals is going to be one thing. It's pretty much going
to
be like,
hey, don't murder me. That's all I came here to say. Just please don't do the murdering me thing.
Well, to me, that sounds like some
cool shit.
Okay. I wanted to talk about AI-driven art. Now, this has been a thing for a while here, but there was a great article on Kotaku, actually, by Luke Plunkett, who's a pretty good writer, and it came out last week, and it really just started making me thinking about the ethical implications of AI-created art in a kind of a meaningful way. So check out this article, but really, it's written from the perspective of the artist and how artists are already undervalued in society, and what happens when AI can create all of the art, and maybe it's good, right? What happens to the artist, and what happens to, you know, people who have, you know, design as a profession, like, you know, you do, Dave, and you know, our teams do. What happens when you can have it just programmed by AI? And we're pretty close now, you know?
I'll tell you what happens, Brad. Because John Oliver did a piece on this, I think last Sunday or the Sunday before, and it's pretty funny. If you haven't seen it,
I haven't.
Check it out. It's hilarious. It's at the end of the show.
Right on.
It's short. It's like 5 minutes. It's super hilarious. That's all I'll say. So I went in and I started doing this stuff, and it's pretty grotesque. Like, all the people's faces are like smushed together, and like it's nightmarish.
So you're not worried like about it today, but like a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, this is going to be like very substantial and become more of a thing. So
it's like those fake Nirvana songs out there that computers made, right? That's pretty haunting.
So today we're talking about static art, and some of it works and some of it doesn't. But, you know, in the near future, we're going to be talking about, you know, video games and, you know, even narrative content, you know, like movies. This will be able to be driven by AI. Right. And it sounds like sci-fi, and it is, but it's also coming, and it'll start and it'll be nightmare fuel, but then it'll get better. And then what happens to the artists and the creators at that point, and who owns the content? In February, this is from the article, the U.S. Copyright Office refused to grant a copyright for a piece of art made by AI. because they said that human authorship is a prerequisite to copyright protection, which is interesting, completely understandable, but also has some questions, you know, on the other side. Like, what about the people who programmed and created the AI that created the art? Don't they have some license? It's very interesting stuff.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Well, well, hey, you know what that is, Brad?
Cool shit.
Yeah. Anyhow, why don't we take a quick break to pay some bills, and then we'll come back with our very special guest and today's main topic. Sound good?
Sounds great.
Hello, David. It's me, Alec Baldwin.
Whoa. Why are you in my bathroom? How did you get in here? Dude, I'm kind of busy.
I just wanted to know if you've heard the good news.
Did you? Are you here to talk about Jesus in my bathroom?
No, my friend. The good news about Arby's, Big Beef and Cheddar.
Okay, you, Alec Baldwin, broke not just into my house, but into my bathroom. There's just two keys. That's two keys you had to break just to talk about Arby's?
Here's the thing. People said there was no way Arby's Big Beef and Cheddar sandwich could get even better. But they took their famous roast beef, topped it with cheddar cheese sauce and zesty red ranch, and served it on a toasted onion roll. And then they said, "We told you so."
Yeah, Arby's sounds pretty sanctimonious, but I really need you to leave, Alec.
You have no idea what these people are capable of, what they'll do if you don't order their Big Beef and Cheddar in a delicious combo meal with curly fries, horsey sauce, and a Coca-Cola Classic. Or in their special 2-for-4 promotion, that's two Big Beef and Cheddar sandwiches for only $4 at select retailers.
Yeah, Alec, so I'm scrolling my phone here because, again, I'm on the toilet and I'm looking at the internet, and that 2-for-4 promotion hasn't been a thing since around 2008. Also, you look nothing like Alec Baldwin. Who are you?
You see this watch? You see this watch?
Huh?
That watch costs more than your car. I made $970,000 last year. How much you make? You see, pal, that's who I am. And you are nothing. Nice guy, I don't give a shit. Good father, screw you, go home and play with your kids.
The watch is drawn on your wrist with a Sharpie and you misspelled fossil.
I don't have time for this.
Yes, please get out of my bathroom before I strangle you.
Fine, but not before I say one more thing.
Oh, God, just do it.
Arby's, we have the meats. And we are back with today's main topic and today's very, very special guest, Carolyn Newhausen. Carolyn is a writer and producer, a media and entertainment technology professional. She's worked with incredible brands since 2010. In addition to being a working journalist for the last 14 years with work that's appeared in the LA Times community newspapers, Curbed LA, Sunset Magazine, and a variety of other publications, she has also worked at the nexus of digital product management, marketing and website production for CBS Networks apps, mobile and desktop sites, and for AT&T's entertainment division. And most recently, she's written and built articles and video content for Netflix's branded content site, Tudum. Tudum? Is that how I say it?
Tudum, I think.
Tudum?
Tudum.
Tudum.
Tudum. And coming from Netflix is a very interesting perspective for today's episode, indeed. So that'll give us some great fodder for conversation. And most excitingly, today's episode topic comes directly from Carolyn. So thank you so much for the suggestion, Carolyn, as we talk about HBO Max.
Yeah, and that's if I could jump in, that's a great reminder for you listeners out there. You know, we read our mailbag all the time. Go ahead and drop in some episode ideas on the socials.
I know that you might all be thinking, you know, with the thousands of pieces of correspondence that we get, requests, emails, comments, and all that stuff, that we don't have time to actually dig into all of them. But we do. We actually do take the time. Most of our Saturday is spent reading emails.
That's why producer Joe's not here right now. That's what he's right. doing. We've got him in the back. He's just reading through your emails.
So we really do value your suggestions, and please keep them coming. And Carolyn, thank you so much. We're so glad to have you here. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the podcast. And another shout out to people dropping things on the socials. I saw you post something on LinkedIn and I just said something like, hey, let's talk about it in the mess that that was HBO Max. So, yeah. So you guys really do, you read your socials and you take suggestions.
Yeah. And, it was a mess and it will be a mess in the future. So this is going to be a great, great topic for us to talk about. Maybe we should talk first about our backgrounds with HBO as a brand. I'm very interested in brands and HBO is a great brand. Here's my background. When I was a freshman in film school, I made a list of all the companies that I would ever want to work for in entertainment, and HBO was definitely on that list. It wasn't a long list. It was like 10 or so companies, you know, that I really admired. HBO was on there. And by the way, to brag a bit, I ended up working exclusively for the companies that I put on that list as a freshman until very recently, because wow. The company that I work for didn't exist when I was a freshman. So anyway, I'm pretty proud of that. But HBO was always a prestige brand for me, even as a kid. You had to pay money for it, and it really did feel premium. And I learned a lot through HBO, good and bad. I learned what stand-up comedy was through Comic Relief, through George Carlin specials and Def Comedy Jam when I was, you know, a pre-teenager. I watched a show on HBO called Dream On, way too young, and I'm still not sure if that show is straight up brilliant or not. I haven't gone back and to revisit it, but it was definitely an R-rated show that I shouldn't have been watching. The Sopranos premiered when I was in my late teens, and I was a huge fan, and that just like really nailed this down as something special. That was my background, you know, with HBO growing up. How about you, Carolyn?
Yeah, so I definitely have very similar feelings towards HBO. I think in the household, we went through periods of time where we had it, and then maybe other periods of time where we, you know, a few years where we didn't have it.
Yep.
So HBO has been a big part of my life since my teens. And I would say like there were two light bulb moments. One, right around the time I was 17, as many young women in my generation at that time, about 2003, 2004, like I was just old enough to remember that Sex and the City had previously wrapped maybe like 2 to 3 years prior on HBO linear, broadcast. And, you know, as a 12, 13, 14 year old, I was like much too young to be watching it or really getting it. But then at 17, 18, I was old enough to rent the series on my own, right? Yeah. Like didn't need mom and dad. Yes, I rented it from a Blockbuster. And I was old enough to like start appreciating the humor. And as somebody who had some powerful girl relationships in my life, it really kind of took to the love that you see between all, you know, the women in that show. And then I think the other second light bulb moment was in my teens, I started getting more interested in politics and journalism. So I was an avid Real Time with Bill Maher fan for a while. Now, sure. Whenever I bring that up, I always caveat, like, I don't necessarily agree with everything the guy says, but I've never seen someone who had similar humor and political opinions as I did. And so I respect his insight and satire. And whenever I felt like I was in a bout of just kind of ennui or I don't know, I just didn't know what was happening in my life, I would turn to Real Time and it would always leave me interested, engaged, and laughing out loud.
Yeah, same. I have a very similar experience and kind of perspective on Bill Maher. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't agree with everything. I did go through a period where I was like, watching almost religiously, pun intended, I guess. You know, I disagree with a lot of kind of what he's grown into, but still find his insights sometimes valuable.
Yeah, and it's and just to say, it's interesting as somebody who's been watching him for like 15 years, it's interesting to see his own political beliefs shift over time. Like
agreed.
That's been interesting to see too.
Yeah. And, you know, journalism on HBO, I think, is pretty... pretty exceptional too, with, you know, some of their Vice series have been quite good. Mm-hmm. A lot of their documentary series. Can someone help me say the word documentary?
I think it's pronounced, how about you, Dave?
Okay. Let me try that again. How about you, Dave?
Okay. Well, for me, I'm a little bit older than you, Brad. So I've got some Fraggle Rock memories. Does anybody remember the show, which you cannot get on HBO Max? Maybe we can get into that. Down to Fraggle Rock. Yeah. So, Carolyn, but before I get into my experience, you're going to be happy to know that we at the Sucks podcast are huge Sex and the City fans. And before we can go any further, though, I'm going to need to know if you are Team Big or Team Aiden.
Yeah, so good question. From what I've read, it sounds like they were going to bring him back in the first the kind of extension of the show. Now it looks like maybe they're bringing him back in the second season. You know, I wonder if Carrie's going to wreck Aiden's heart for the third time. I'm Team Aiden. Big is like, he's the fantasy, right? Like he's the guy that like you want to chase you, and so then you end up chasing him. But ultimately, he's like, he kind of represents all of the worst things about like the bad boyfriends. Like I typically think of him as like an emotionally withholding creep. And he kept Carrie anxious like all the time. She just never knew where she stood with him. And that's certainly not a foundation for a solid relationship. So I don't know. I think he's like I think Big is like the big bad boy that everyone's mother warns them about. And I always say, listen, ladies, he's bad for a reason. So stay away.
He was kind of like this deus ex machina in the show. You know, he would just show up. He would pull up in a limousine, and then Carrie would drop everything and her life just pause while Big was doing his thing. Then he'd disappear again. And that sounds pretty toxic to me.
Mm. Well, Carolyn, you had me at Team Aiden. So we can continue with this episode.
I don't think we can. I have more to say about Aiden.
Aiden is great. And I'm happy they're bringing him.
I'm happy they're bringing him back. But like, what in the world are they going to do with him? Like, Carrie
they're going to get married.
This guy
and she's
so
going to be happy.
What? He would be making a huge mistake.
I think Carrie is the
messing
villain.
With her.
Carrie's the villain. They should turn around and make it his show. Aiden in the city.
So, listen, this is when I was watching and just like that, this is how I thought the first season was going to wrap. I thought she had the episode. I think it was.
Spoiler alert.
Yes. I'm sorry. Yes. Spoiler alert. She has the lamp like over her bedside lamp, and like it keeps like flipping off and on. And then she's talking about, well, maybe it's the spirit of Big coming back to me or whatever. And she takes the lamp to a lamp repair shop. And we knew that Aiden was into interior design.
Right.
So I thought their meet cute was going to be, they were going to bump into each other there at the lamp shop. And so, you know,
I'm sure they'll
reckon with all of this. In the next season.
Yeah. I'm excited though. We're all excited. But we want Aiden back. But so listen, back to my experience. Whenever Sex and the City comes on, it takes a lot of chunk out of our episode.
That's right. It's all staying in. Keep it in. And
Brad,
and
I will double it. We need to catch up, or else our authenticity is going to be gone, Brad, because we didn't watch the entire season of And Just Like That. So
I
think we need to get that's your homework. You got your homework, Brad.
Okay.
So for me, I'm going to keep this really quick. My experience was, I still remember the first thing I ever watched on HBO, because we were a family without means in the beginning, and we couldn't afford HBO, like Brad says, a premium brand, right? And one day I turn on the cable, I'm clicking through, and back then you didn't have a remote. You had a box that was wired to the television, and it had these little knobs and like a switch. It was really prehistoric.
Okay, you are older than me.
It had three levels, right? So you'd flick it down to the second row, and then you click those. I don't know. It was really weird.
I literally have confusing. No idea what you're talking
about. Yeah. Well, I'll put a picture up on the socials for you, Brad.
Okay.
But anyway, I remember clicking around, and then all of a sudden, I see Flash Gordon is on my TV. And Flash Gordon was not available on regular television at the time. This was like, it just gotten out of the, it was, and I'm like, oh my God, mom. I like ran. Then I'm like, mom. And she's like, what? She got very, my mom was very practical and very by the rules. My dad was a cop, you know? So it was like, oh, we're not supposed to have HBO. I'm going to have to call the cable company and let them know. I'm like, no. So I begged and pleaded. She of course alerted them. They did nothing. They did nothing.
Because it's HBO free weekend.
No, but it wasn't even free weekend. They didn't even do that. It was a mistake. And we kept HBO for free, even though she told them, for like, I want to say 5 or 6 years.
Yes. You are breathing privileged air, my friend.
Yes. So that is my HBO experience. And I still remember that intro. Do you guys remember the music? And you're going through the town. You got that little miniature town, and it sails up into space. And then you get the HBO logo. And the reason, as a movie guy, and Brad, you can relate to this, it felt like, I get the movies in my home. It was amazing.
It was a big deal. That intro is an all-time classic, by the way.
Oh yeah.
All time.
We both knew it. I just started singing it. You jumped right in.
Yeah. Well, I remember like it started like with this. I don't know who they got. I want to research who composed that theme because it's brilliant. It started small and they're like going through the town and it's like every day. And HBO, these big, huge block letters, which screamed brand. Right. This is a brand to be reckoned
sir.
With.
Yes, sir.
Anyhow.
I also think like what Dick Wolf did for the gavel, like ding, ding, like dun, HBO dun. Has done shh, right? Like,
yes, that's good now.
Yeah. Yep.
No, we should pause there for a second because not everyone's good at this. Like Netflix, I think is ridiculous. But dong, like what is that? What is that? That sounds like an error message.
they call that To Doom. That's what the To Doom branded content is like. That's the name, right?
I got it.
It makes sense.
I got it. So we should go through. I wish we could drop this. I wish we'd thought about this before because I'd like to go through and rank all of them.
Yeah.
And I think HBO with the TV clicking on, which most it's kind of an old thing. Like nobody gets that, but us old folks, Brad. Right. It's the television turning on, right? And the static sound.
I like Disney Plus too.
The click. That click. Yes.
Which I'm sure they stole from Nintendo Switch. Like Nintendo
Switch. Oh, you're right. They totally did.
Same thing.
Those bastards. We can't give them credit.
Yeah. If you wanted to, you could drop
What's Hulu's? What's Hulu's and what's Amazon Prime's?
Oh, man. Do they have them?
I'm not sure. I think Hulu does have one. I just don't know that it's like sticking in my mind.
Then that means that they didn't do a good job.
Yeah.
Right.
I think we could stop there.
All right. So let's go into the history of HBO as a streaming service, and because it's been a rocky road, and it continues to be a rocky path for HBO.
Indeed.
Dave, you want to take us through some of the bullets here?
Okay. There was two products there, right? We've got HBO Go and HBO Now. And I remember talking with you and producer Joe, and we were scratching our heads as to what the heck the difference was. They're different products. One was for cable subscribers. Catch up to the shows they hadn't seen, and the other one was for
one was for people without cable. But like was interesting about HBO Go was that as it was for cable subscribers, they were still driving tune in. That was the purpose of HBO Go, which is weird. But if you rewind to streaming services and if you rewind to streaming media, as recently as 5 years or so ago, I worked at ABC at that time, and the apps and the websites and all of it was meant to drive tune in to linear, which is crazy bananas that like even 5 years ago that
was for our users what that means, because I'm confused. Tune in to linear, what is that? Are those products?
Do you want to take that one, concept?
So like take HBO. It's like a perfect example. They knew that two things were happening at the same time. They knew that people were cord cutting, particularly those people that were millennials, right? Like in my generation. And so they didn't want to lose those guys. And so they were like, well, let's make this app that people can get a la carte.
Yeah.
And then, but then they didn't necessarily want to, they probably had some muckety mucks and some executives who also were like super invested in the fact that they still had this linear broadcast network. And so like, they would be like, hey, catch up and then catch this week's episode of Real Time at 10 PM, whatever, Friday on HBO. And so they're trying to appease both audiences, like the old guard that still wants and and still employs hundreds or thousands of people on their network, but also like trying to catch those of us who are cord cutting. Mm-hmm. Can I also pause here and just say that like I come from a television broadcast family. Both parents worked in CBS linear. And like this was like a major watershed moment. I remember being at Warner Brothers when CBS app, CBS came out with their app, which was like mind blowing.
Right.
Because it's like people think of CBS as being kind of old guard and like stodgy and more conservative than other networks. And like the fact that they were seeing the future, like that they knew that they had to jump on.
Yeah.
And then I remember thinking like this streaming thing is not going to be the death of cable until one or many of the premium networks jump ship. And when HBO came out with their a la carte app, I remember thinking like it was just one of those light bulb moments where I was like, this is a big shit. Yeah. Like this is a big game changer in the industry.
Right. Yep. Can I add on to that? Brad, and I'm gonna toot my own horn here because you know I complain about things. Mm-hmm. This is the way they should be for our entire friendship. Yes. Right. And like one of them was mobile phones. I never wanted to pay for a subscription, and now they're all subscription free. I remember working for a management consulting firm, and we had a speaker one time, and he was talking about cable companies and how they would not offer a la carte.
Yep.
And I remember thinking at that moment, they are backward thinking and they're going to lose this fight in the long run. And that was probably like 10 to 12 years ago. So toot, toot. That's all I want to say. But anyway, so I'm glad that is, you're right. It's a watershed moment. And around that time also, HBO, I'm going to skip ahead here a little, Brad, because I don't know if anybody really wants to know about BAM Tech and Brightcove. Yeah,
they may not care about BAM Tech and Brightcove and yada, yada, yada.
I think the most important thing that Disney Plus was getting ready to launch.
Right.
And HBO knew they were playing catch up.
Yes.
Right. So they had these two products and they wanted to merge them onto one, and they wanted to go big or go home. Right. So they did like the video game industry is known to do. And they said, you know what? We're going to launch sloppy and we'll clean it up later. Am I right about that?
Oh, you are right. So one thing I wanted to mention is in 2018, I had a series of interviews at HBO to run their operations in their Long Island center. And
humble brag alert. Humble brag alert.
Yeah, for sure. So what was shocking about this is that it was 2018 and they still had this facility that was analog, and that was what was powering their service. Yeah. So that was absolutely amazing. So they had this facility which was run by Teamsters who were putting tapes in decks, and that was powering how HBO powered their platform, which was shocking. And if you guys remember, HBO Max today looks pretty good. When you're streaming content, it looks pretty good.
It's gotten better.
It was the case even 2 years ago. Yep. Even on HBO Go and HBO Now, when they decommissioned that, the content looked like garbage. And it looked very much like someone was plugging in tapes into decks and that was being streamed. Because that's what it was. So that's not the case now. But in 2018, 2019, it was. So
just a
little background of how far they had to come and how much they had to rebuild their infrastructure to get where they are today.
Yeah. So I just wanted to jump in here and say like two things, which is like, I think Brad was talking about that they did what the gaming industry does. And like, you just kind of push out, like if it's ready, it ships. And like, you just push it out, even though it's not perfect. Right. And then you iterate and you get better over time. Mm-hmm. And I think from like a product management perspective, I get that. And like, I have to give them kudos for, I mean, that is what the agile project management, that is what the methodology is. Mm. And then the other thing is there was a resource article that you guys linked to, and they mentioned that essentially the app, it was basically built.
Yeah.
One of the things it was supposed to do is it was supposed to just be able to serve up Game of Thrones episodes and like, and handle all of the heavy traffic that was going to come in. So like, that was their number one priority, which means they never went into really kind of scoping out what they wanted this thing to look like beyond, oh, we just have to handle all the crazy traffic that's going to come from the Game of Thrones watchers. So I just think that's important to mention.
I totally agree.
Yeah. And that all of that brings us to the launch. Why don't we talk about the launch? Brad, we have anecdotal experience with this launch. I kind of wish producer Joe was here.
I know.
Because I never fully understood his problem, but maybe you can do your best to sum it up.
Producer Joe was trying to stream it over like a PlayStation or an Xbox.
Something like that. Yeah.
You know, you guys, we don't need to explain this to our.
I think it was like, so the problem was you couldn't figure out what to play it on. Like Roku didn't have it yet. So my HBO Go or Now or whatever the heck it was called was going away. But the Max thing, apparently, I wouldn't be able to get. And I was in the middle of watching shows and stuff. And it was like, what?
Absolute nightmare. Like, you know, they made it impossible for me to actually legally have HBO Max for a period of many months. As a Roku user, as an Android user, and someone who also consumes through Amazon, wasn't available on Roku, wasn't available on Amazon, period.
Yeah. And, you sound like business deals they failed to make or something like that, right?
Well, there was all the licensing deals. You know, you guys know how this works. You know, if you buy something through the Apple store or if it's on the Amazon marketplace, you have to give them a giant cut. And those business deals weren't in place. They weren't ready to go for the launch of HBO Max. So it was, I think, 4 months between the launch of HBO Max and when I could actually consume it on a Roku or Amazon. Or maybe, actually, I don't even think you can do it on Amazon now. Anyway, I have to fact check that. But how about you, Carolyn? What was your experience around that launch window?
Yeah, you know, I do seem to remember that the whole Roku, that they weren't available on Roku, which just seems so weird because I would think like beyond Amazon Fire TV, probably the only other like main competitor in connected devices would be a Roku.
It's like 30-40% market share. It's insane.
Totally. Mm. I'm like, that was weird. I do remember, so I'm as somebody who's interested in words and writing and messages, I remember thinking about marketing, like the marketing, which, you know, yeah, I'm young-ish, but I've always kind of been a little bit of a Luddite. And so like, my heart is always kind of like older people where like your marketing has to be clear enough that all of us get it. I just remember thinking like HBO Now, HBO Go, HBO Max, do I have to, all the questions, it was like, do I have to pay for HBO Now if I want HBO Max? And like, or am I subscribed? So
brand
many questions.
Confusion, you know?
Yes. The marketing wasn't tightened up, but I'm not surprised given their launch, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, on that note, on words and what they mean, my biggest complaint about HBO Max is why they add the Max. I think they've merged with Cinemax because it even looks like the Cinemax logo. Does that have anything to do with it? Like, what is the point of making it Max?
No,
well, HBO does own Cinemax.
Okay, but they're not ending the Cinemax brand. They didn't merge.
You're right.
So that was really confusing to me.
HBO Max was their way. I think I could be wrong here, but like, I think maybe was this a response in trying to rebrand HBO Digital as something new now that AT&T had bought Time Warner? Was that the idea behind it?
I know.
So I think that they were, I mean, look, you know, from my backseat driver perspective, I just would have called it HBO period.
Right.
Yeah. Not HBO period, but HBO. You know, we talk a lot about the plus thing and that's overused. You don't want to call it that. I understand the HBO Max thing, but I think it's unnecessary. You should just call it HBO. But yeah,
I agree. It's like new Coke. Maybe eventually they'll pull the new off and it'll just be Coke again.
Okay. So
someday.
Let's keep it going because I think we're going a little long here. It had this rocky, inauspicious launch. It was quickly followed by some really controversial business decisions during the pandemic. Specifically, I'm talking about Warner Brothers' decision to release all theatrical content day and date, theatrical and on HBO, which drove Hollywood insane and just really filled me with such delight. I loved it.
Yes, same.
Hollywood hated it, but that's what it was. So, now I think we're in this period where they've kind of ironed out a lot of their shit. And now it's going to change again. And we're going to get into that later. But this roller coaster is going to keep on going now that Warner Brothers and Discovery have merged. And that is going to have serious impact on the HBO Max experience, which we'll key into a bit later. But Carolyn, to bring it to current day, from a design perspective, do you think that it's best in class, or how do you think that HBO Max is doing today?
You know, I think there are some things they're doing really well. And there's a big part of me that wishes like, listen, the last time I used it was like August, September of last year. And I remember even then like having some issues. The app of last year is much different than it is today. And so like, there's a part of me that like vindictively kind of wishes that we had bashed on it last year when it was like a real mess. And now, you know, good for them that they've actually gotten things kind of squared away. It's come a long way, and I'll give you some examples. So one of my main gripes was I'd be watching Boardwalk Empire. So this is maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I'd be, let's say, on season one, episode three, and, you know, it would finish and I would want to go on to season one, episode four, the next episode. But there was no easy way for me just to get to the next episode. I would have to like click. There was like all this really cool bonus content for Boardwalk Empire, which is like super cool. And then like a sneak peek at the next episode. But in order to get that next episode, I'd have to backtrack to the series page, remember what I had just watched, then like click on the right episode. And I think I could be wrong here, but I think I might even have had to like parse for like what season I was on. It was just a mess. That, and then like the other thing was it wanted me to make a profile. I get that, right? Because there are kids that watch and there's like non-kid friendly entertainment on HBO. But I would make a profile and then I would click my profile and then it would have some weird hang up where it would like log me out and then I would log back in and it would ask me to do, and it was just like this sort of cycle of like foolishness.
It still kind of does this.
It does.
So when I'm consuming a show on HBO Max and sometimes it'll boot me out. And I think that's the app's fault. Or sometimes I'll just navigate out of the app briefly. Yeah. When I come back into it, I still choose my profile, and then I have to go through unnecessary steps to get back to the content.
It's the worst profile page of all of them. It's just a circle with a letter in it. Like, you know, Netflix, you can put pictures in. It's fun. You can customize it. Yeah. But it does that, and then you get those three little circles at the bottom after you click your profile, which is like, okay. It's, you know, you're giving me some feedback. It's a little signifier that it's thinking, but then there's a long pause before it goes. And when I say long pause, it's like 2 seconds, but you know what I mean? Too long. Yeah. Like I've put up with the three rotating circles.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so, Carolyn, before you go on, can I ask just a level set, like how we were or are consuming HBO Max? Like what platform are you using on or using on your phone, et cetera?
No, my laptop. That's how I've been watching it. Mm-hmm.
Roku here.
And then, okay, every once in a while, a Roku, like when I go visit my parents or like on my phone, but usually the laptop.
Got it.
Okay. So then like there were some other issues. So here's where they've made a huge improvement. Like Netflix does when you watch one episode and there's that button that's like skip to the next episode. They have done that now. And so like you can consume, like say for example, Sex and the City episode, episode one, and then it'll just lead you kind of seamlessly into episode two, which is the way that like, from a business perspective, like, of course they want you to keep like stay in the ecosphere and like keep binging. So they finally caught up there. It's a big improvement.
There's a problem there, if I can interject. How long is the time you get to select you want to listen to the credits? Because if you're watching, that is the big pet peeve of mine on Netflix. Like I go to grab the remote and then the button goes away and I miss the credits. Sometimes I like the credits. Like The Bear, for example, great music,
great show,
great credits. If I don't get to hit that button in time and it breaks me out of the mood of the whole episode and ruins it for me.
Right.
So I would say as a user experience, keep that button there.
You're basically saying like you want to be able to like hit the button rather than it kind of like auto playing you into the next episode.
Yeah. But I get why they wouldn't want that. Or maybe just give me longer lead time. You know?
Also that, you know, we're coming from a perspective of working in the industry and those credits mean something to us.
Yeah.
Totally. That it doesn't have any relevance to probably most
of beyond that, Brad. I'm just talking about the experience of the show. Like for example, The Bear ends.
Yeah.
And it's a great song that plays that you love because they're really good.
Those Neil drops in The Bear are insane. Like it's like a Pearl Jam drop or something like that.
Yeah, and you want to listen to it because it's part of the episode.
Right.
You know, so anyway.
So like one other thing that I think is problematic. So they do a good job of like having these different content tags where they break out their content by genre, right? So if you want sci-fi or horror or comedy or original series, you can tap on these tags and it's going to parse the thousands of pieces of content HBO owns to just what you want to watch. But the problem is that they've made their hero image go full bleed and they have all that content below the fold. So like I was tapping the tag and I was like, well, that's weird. The marquee or the hero image isn't changing. And like, I don't know if it's actually hearing me. Well, you have to move your mouse to see like, oh no, they have given you all of your comedy results. It's just below the fold. And like, I think that if they had like a carrot, if they were able to show like the top 10%, if they shortened that marquee image by like 10% and then they had the content tags and then they had like the top 10% of the images below, then like as a user, you'd be like, oh, there's something below the fold. Let me scroll down here.
Totally agree. Carolyn, and while we're on that hero image, I was going to save this for later, but one thing that I noticed in my experience and research for this episode is that hero marquee area doesn't seem to be personalized.
It's not.
If it is, they're doing a very bad job of it, right? So they're serving up content that I don't care about, taking up half of the screen, you know?
And also, like, and images that are not contact. I mean, and maybe it's too much of a heavy lift for, like, the person who's programming those marquees. And, like, listen, I was that person at CBS.com, so I know what the job's like.
Same.
But, like, the images aren't even contextual to the tags you tap. So, like, yeah, there's something to be done there, I think, for sure. So that's me bashing on HBO. HBO Max, let me take a pause here and say something that I think from an editorial standpoint, I think they HBO.com and HBO Max does quite well, which is, so they have this segment when you go into their menu that's called Last Chance.
Yes.
And it's a bucket that shows you like all the programs that maybe only have like a month or a week left on the service before they drop out of window. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a good idea. Prime does something like that where they have a little flag on like the thumbnail image for each piece of content. Mm-hmm. And so like, I'll give you an example. Like I was on Prime, I was super bored and I like documentaries and ancient history. So I saw that there was this program on the ancient kingdom of Urartu, which is modern day Armenia. Mm-hmm. And Prime told me, hey, this documentary is disappearing. Last day on service is August 21st. So I was like, okay, cool. That's how I'm going to spend my time. And so like in the same way, HBO calls out the content that's soon leaving the service. On the flip side, they also have a bucket, an editorial bucket that's like coming soon. And that's a good way to whet people's appetites for staying on the service. There's a huge maybe it's me just overselling it, but like there's a trend of people kind of bouncing out of services, right? Like you see, what you want to see, you don't know, like if you want to spend the extra $10 or $15 next month, but like, if you know what's coming, then it just whets your appetite to stay on.
I use that last chance all the time. I think it's very well done. And it looks like it's personalized to me, or I am just in that target audience for all HBO content. Like, I'm looking at it right now. The last chance area is insane. It's Beetlejuice, Broadcast News, Ocean's 11, Hairspray, which is a great movie, by the way, Get Carter, A Mighty Wind, The Fugitive. Like, this is directly targeted toward me. So that's either an accident or quite deliberate and genius. We might also talk, while we're talking about positives, is The Hubs. I think that The Hubs are great.
I like The Hubs. I just found that last night. I didn't even know it was there.
Oh, yeah.
What are the Hubs, Brad? Tell our users what the Hubs are.
Okay, so the Hubs, they have HBO as a hub, which is a little generic, but they also have DC, TCM, Turner Classic Movies, which is where I spend most of my time, Adult Swim, Studio Ghibli, which is quite, I mean, the fact that they got Studio Ghibli content on HBO Max is a huge coup.
Big one,
By the way, just to plug my would you, in the running for my favorite movie of all time is Kiki's Delivery Service, which is only streaming on HBO Max, and it is just such a wonderful movie. Please go watch it. But those are the hubs, you know. They also have Looney Tunes, which I watch a lot with my daughter. Cartoon Network, Sesame Street.
I have one comment on the hubs, and this is probably a small one, but like those logo bugs are really tiny. I had to squint. Maybe I'm just old. Yeah, but they're really on my TV, at least.
Really?
I mean, I don't have a huge TV, so maybe that's the problem. But I have a big enough TV that I shouldn't be squinting. Hey, where are these leaving now, or what did you call it?
Last chance.
Yeah, where is it? Because I want to see if mine match up with yours or are customized.
Well, that's a good idea. So I'm using my phone, which I
I see it. It's okay, Mad Max 2, which I've watched 1,000 times. Great. Oh, and not Mad Max 2. No, Mad Max Fury Road. Okay.
Okay.
Movie. But they knew that I've been watching Fury Road a lot, so that's probably right. Beetlejuice, Dusk Till Dawn, The Raid 2. I don't know what that is. Bronson. So these are different. Starship Troopers, National Europeans Vacation. Yes, I've been watching a little bit of that. So they are.
Go. So it's contextualized and it's served via personalization. So that's great.
Yeah. Cool. I probably don't want to watch most of these, though.
Well, okay, so they've come a long way. What else do we want to talk about in terms of the HBO experience?
I think I've successfully bashed on them, and I think I'm tapped out on.
I've got two more. Yeah. So, and by the way, it took me, Brad and I, when we were talking about this, we're like, I don't have a problem with HBO Max. Like, how are we going to do this episode? Maybe we do it as kind of a retrofit, like, hey, HBO knew we were coming, so they fixed all their shit. Right? Like, they
heard our first episode in January, and they saw us coming for them, and they're like, oh, we better move our ass into gear right now, otherwise podcast is going to come at us.
But so I did my research. I went in there. I watched a bunch of stuff. I tried the rehearsal. I couldn't get into it. A couple other shows I watched. Here's what I did notice. There is some freeze frame stuff that seems kind of prehistoric. Seems like Netflix, 8 years ago. Like, it's like, you know what I'm talking about, where it's like, it freezes. Like, I'll hear the voices and the audio is still going, but the video has frozen. That happens a lot. Unacceptable. And then the other thing is, like, when I pause something for a while, like, say I gotta go get more popcorn, and I come back, and it's not always the same experience. Like, I tried to get this to repeat the same thing to complain about, but one time it would just crash and send me back to the main screen. I had to kind of go back to home on Roku and then jump back into HBO. Another time it would just freeze and just not do anything. Like, so there's something with clicking on, and somebody else has a problem with this too. I don't know if it's Hulu or Amazon. One of those are just unforgivable. Like, it will always boot you back to the series page, and it annoys me. I'm like, I don't want that. Like, why would I want to click and click again? Like, just press play. It's just a play and pause button. But so HBO has to clean that up a little bit. Really, those are my two gripes. Brad, do you have anything else?
Well, as it stands today, relating to your stability issues, which have plagued HBO Max since its launch, they've gotten better. And right now, as it stands, this is approximately September 2022. To date this episode, they're in the progress of migrating technology platforms to something much more stable. So not all users are migrated over yet, but some are, and they reported about 90% decrease in crashes and those stutters that you were referring to. So where I think we are in the terms of HBO Max's life cycle, we are in the calm before the storm. We're in the eye of the hurricane. Like, we started with a really rocky launch. We're now in an area where it's fairly smooth and stable, and it's getting better, and it's going to change again. And that's where we get into the news a bit. So, you know, this is my hot take. Maybe it's not a hot take, but, you know, they got a lot of this stuff sorted out, and it's all going to go away within a year. Next summer, we're going to be right back at square one because of this HBO Discovery merger. So for people who don't know, the parent company Warner Brothers was acquired by Discovery. So now it's Warner Brothers Discovery. And what that means for our users, for users of HBO Max, is that HBO Max and Discovery Plus are going to merge into a new entity next.
Hang on, Brad. Discovery bought Warner Brothers? That seems backwards. Well, I didn't even know Discovery was a big deal. I've watched like three Discovery things in my life.
Well, I do subscribe to Discovery Plus, and I enjoy that service mostly. And they're going to merge all that content into HBO, and they don't know what they're going to call it, and they don't know what they're going to charge for it yet. But it's going to happen approximately next summer.
How about Go Discover HBO Max? That's what I think I call it. Plus.
Click. Go Discover HBO Max now.
Yes. For the win, Brad. For the win.
Okie dokie. But okay, so this, I don't know what this is going to be like, but it's hard to imagine, right? Like, HBO has this brand that we've been talking about. It's premium. It's narrative driven. It's high quality. And that is not what Discovery brand is. No. Like, no respect to Discovery, but it's like a plethora of low production turnkey kind of shows across a whole bunch of networks. So let me set it up for you. Like, right now HBO is TCM, Studio Ghibli, HBO, DC. You know, these have some uniformity in what that means, right? Now, to merge into Discovery, you're talking about adding to that experience Discovery Channel, HGTV, Food Network, TLC, Investigation Discovery, Travel Channel, Turbo Velocity, whatever that is, Animal Planet, Science Channel, OWN, Oprah's Network, and Eurosport. And that sounds kind of exciting to have all those channels until you realize that they're all just ghost hunters. Every single one of those is just ghost hunters. That's all they do.
Hey, Brad, I got a solution here, and Discovery's not going to like it. Yeah. But I think they need to be humble and know that they're the second tier brand, and they need to fold all their stuff into the hub. All that is hub stuff, including Discovery.
Yeah, I think you could add it as other hubs, but like, when you're thinking about that homepage experience to get, you know, tactical and programming, you are going to have Property Brothers.
This is
integrated with Game of Thrones on this homepage. And I cannot imagine how that's going to work.
It feels like something else, Brad. It feels like, I forget, it was a big company that bought another big company. It was like AOL bought like a movie studio or something.
And AOL brought Warner Brothers.
Yes. And what is with Warner Brothers screwing everything up? It just felt icky. It felt like, no, Warner Brothers is the better thing. AOL is a separate entity that does its thing well. Like, these two are odd bedfellows. Like, there should be an odd bedfellow clause in business deals where they go, no, these streams should not cross, you know, don't cross the streams.
HBO Discovery, or sorry, Warner Brothers Discovery is run by the head of Discovery, David Zaslav. So he has a perspective on what works, and he might be right from a fiscal standpoint.
Okay, what's his perspective?
Well, it's this, you know, this constant churn of, you know, low cost content that powers all of those Discovery networks that I just railed off, right? So that is his perspective, and that is the starting point. And he might be right from a fiscal standpoint, because Warner Brothers and HBO haven't really traditionally been moneymakers.
Interesting. Can I make a prediction?
Please do. Let's get into predictions. What's next?
Same thing that happened with AOL. AOL and Warner Brothers. These two split. This is not a marriage that sticks.
I don't know. I feel like this is, we've been seeing these media conglomerations like since the days of the 80s, right? And like, I don't know, fiscally, I think some people make out really well financially in those deals, but like, I don't know that it net is like better for the consumer. And I don't know that in the HBO crowd makes sense to mingle with the Discovery crowd, but I don't know, you know, I'm also all the show of Discovery, so.
Yeah.
I like both these brands. And from a value standpoint, I can see how this would be a plus, you know, to have more content on a streaming platform for maybe a little bit more money is a good thing. But I think it's a really interesting design mm-hmm. challenge, rather, with mm-hmm. how you would merge these brands. I'm interested in brand and I'm interested in design. So I will be taking a very close look on how this shapes up. And this is probably something that we might want to circle back with in a year.
Yeah. From design, Brad, it feels like when people bring to me, like, say I have a piece I'm working on and there's other data that doesn't make sense on this page, or there's other content that doesn't make sense, and they want me to cram it in there, right? That's what this feels like. It feels like somebody is going to have the terrible job of merging these two together and having that home screen, that profile page where it's like Discovery this way and HBO that way. And you're just like, that is the sound of 1,000 designers screaming at the same time. Did I get that Star Wars?
Yeah, totally.
Quote wrong?
No, I got it. I got it. You know, what's interesting is, like, I almost guarantee you that whoever is stuck with these decisions is probably somebody that I know, Carolyn might know, you might know, Dave. Like, it's a pretty small circle, believe it or not, of the people who work on these streaming apps.
Let's get them let's get them on the pod. Let's talk about, let's help them make a good decision, Brad.
I would love to do that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that might be a pretty good, sort of turning point for the episode. Anything else to add on what's next for HBO Max, Carolyn, Dave?
I guess the only other thing I would say is, like, we're living in a world of 2 to 4 years ago. It's so interesting to see, like, over the last 2 to 4 years, so many streaming services have launched, right? And like, content remains king. I don't know that people are subscribing to apps because the UX is, like, flawless. They're coming because the content's good. However, if you make some UX decisions that puts too much friction between, like, the content and the user, people are going to bounce. I think the last note I will say is, like, I think discoverability, I'll give an example. My parents consume a lot of international, particularly European programming and British programming. And right now there's Acorn and there's BritBox. And there are two services, but they have a hard time remembering, like, did we watch this program on BritBox or did we watch it on Acorn? Or was it the European thing that we were getting through Amazon? And I think, like, the future is, like, making discoverability just as good as possible. And, like, the ways that people can save content from my list and, like, the functionality behind, like, I want to save this so I can watch it later. The clearer those are and, like, the easier those are to use, I think is going to really help people stick with streaming services and relieve some headaches.
Totally agree with all that. Another thing that I would add is, you know, we talked a lot about the rocky launch of HBO Max. That was quaint compared to some of these other launches that we've experienced in the interim, you know? Looking at you, Peacock, what a disaster that service is.
Oh my God.
I don't even think that's going to exist a year from now. That's my prediction.
Yeah. How do you launch going, hey, we're going to take away this thing that everyone in the world loves and then force you to come get it from us?
Oh, you're talking about The Office?
Of course I'm talking about The Office.
Well, regardless, it's a garbage service. Sorry, Peacock. Also, Paramount Plus. You know, Paramount Plus, coming from the bones of CBS All Access. Was it called All Access, Carolyn?
It sure was. Yep.
It doesn't work very well. I think it may be dependent upon your devices, but, like, I just could not get the thing to freaking work on my
brand new that you
Samsung
tried.
TV in my proprietary app. It was really, really a bad experience. So
I don't think these will be around for a while. I think everybody's getting in on it. It's like, you know, it's like when they had those kiosks for DVDs. Like, everybody and their mother Redbox. Like, everybody was going to do it. And then, you know, nobody really beat Redbox, I don't think. I mean, it's the only one I remember. I think Walmart was in on it. Maybe they did good. There was a bunch.
Yeah, we'll see where all this nets out. I do think there's going to be a lot of
churn and burn.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Consolidation is the word I was looking for. I think some of these are going to be consolidated by, you know, the bigger ones like Amazon, maybe even Apple Plus, stuff like that. It's possible.
One more thought. I was going to say, like, I think from a financial perspective, like, there were all the different cable channels, right? And then they started packaging themselves together. Mm-hmm. But then the pendulum swung towards, well, why do I have 60 different sports channels I never wanted to be? All I wanted was HBO, but I had to get the 60 sports channels I didn't want. And so then HBO was like, we're going a la carte. And now we're living in a time where there's so many options. But, like, you know, from a financial perspective, a lot of families are making decisions on, like, a lot of people are making decisions on like, what do I really need? What should I cut back on? I foresee that the pendulum's going to swing the other way. Just like you said, I think they're probably going to start bundling themselves together.
So that consultant 15 years ago was correct. Yeah. Maybe we should have just listened to him all along.
Is it cable 3.0? Right. All right. Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us today. Is there anything that you'd like to plug?
People can follow me on Instagram at LACarolyn626. My name is spelled C-A-R-O-L-Y-N, LACarolyn626, where I post about the writing that I'm doing.
Oh, fantastic.
I love it. I follow you on Instagram. It's a good follow. Highly recommend it for our users and for our listeners. And thank you so much. This was a great episode topic. I thought it was interesting discussion. So thanks for being
here. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And to everyone else, thank you for listening to the Sucks Podcast. Please give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. It does really help. Drop us a line if you have a topic or if you want to be a guest. And in the meantime, we are wishing all of you a well-designed life, good health, and good experiences.
Down to Fraggle Rock.